Harper went down to the edge of the creek. A row of bodies lay sprawled along the muddy bank, twisted by the contortions of violent death. Harper went along the line from one victim to the next, searching. Sometimes he used the toe of his boot to turn a body face up. He stopped when he found Lieutenant Greer. The body lay there, dripping, pale, white-faced. There was a big, dark blotch from the hole in its belly and another one in the side where Harper's first bullet had tagged him. Harper squatted down, tearing open Greer's right breast shirt pocket. He didn't bother opening the pocket. He just tore it loose from the shirt. A square of sodden, folded paper tumbled out. Harper picked it up.
What's that, Brock?
A fake document my friend at Fort Pardee gave me to establish my bona fides with the shave tail.
The paper tore as Harper unfolded it. The handwriting was blurred and smeary from the water, but the Army letterhead and Fort Pardee red stamp were still legible. He tore up the paper into little pieces and threw it away.
That'll protect our inside man at the fort. I might need him again.
Some of the paper fragments stuck to his thick strangler's fingers. He wiped them clean on his pants. Riders on horseback, the men Harper had singled out earlier, came down the trail out of the woods. They rode into the creek, fanning out to round up the wagon guard's stray horses.
As long as I'm in this neck of the woods, might as well make a thorough job of it.
He turned out the rest of Greer's pockets. He came up with a thin wad of greenbacks and a few, not many, gold coins. The search also yielded a pocket watch. It was still ticking. Harper opened the watch. On the inside of the lid was an oval miniature painting of a young woman, an attractive brunette. A couple of outlaws crowded in to take a look.
What's that, Brock?
I don't know. Sweetheart, maybe? Pretty gal. Let's see.
Harper closed the watch case lid. The money he pocketed. Kimbrough narrowed his eyes.
What happened is sharing out the profits equally like we always do.
That's my bonus for nearly getting shot by my own compadres.
I ran the same risk, so I'll take the watch.
Harper shrugged his massive shoulders. He tossed Kimbrough the watch. Kimbrough snatched it out of the air.
Thanks.
A number of outlaws rushed toward the bodies.
Back off, you buzzards.
The others halted in mid-stride.
Me and Kimbrough took ours off the top as a bonus for running the extra risk. The rest of the spoils will be handled in an orderly fashion. Dump it all in a hat and we'll divvy it up later at the hideout.
He knew his men. They were like kids. Greedy kids. A full course meal was laid out on the table, and all they could think of was getting their grubby hands on the penny candy. Whatever pittance lay in the pockets of the dead men was as nothing compared to the wagon's cargo. But if the bad men didn't have at it, they'd be sore and bellyaching. Better to get it over with now, the quicker to get at the real job at hand.
Get to it! Make it fast! We haven't got all day. And remember, anybody dragging down the loot for himself is robbing the rest of you. Having you scavengers watching each other is the best way to keep you honest. If you pardon the expression.
The outlaws fell on the corpses like starving dogs on a juicy bone. They turned out the dead men's pockets, divesting them of their valuables, such as they were. And they weren't much. Something tugged on Harper's sleeve.
What do you want, Fenner?
What about me, Brock?
What about you?
I deserve something. I took a risk, too.
Risk? You were safe here on the far side of the creek while Kimbrough and me were in the thick of it.
Oh, Brock, it don't be like that.
Shut up.
Fenner wore a high-crowned hat. Harper snatched it off his head.
Hey, what are you doing?
Take it easy, Fenner. This hat of yours will fit the bill.
Harper turned it upside down.
Here, man. Put the loot in Fenner's hat. Anybody holds out, I'll shoot him. And make it quick. There's work to do and daylight's burning.
Scavenging the dead men's pockets yielded a meager take.
Them soldier boys don't carry much in the way of hard currency.
Pays almost as little as cow punching.
The corpses' yield of money, watches, and such was not enough to fill the inside of Fenner's hat to the brim.
Kyle, get up here!
Call came forward. He was a full-blooded Kiowa, an outcast from his tribe, who now rode the outlaw trail. Harper handed him the hat filled with loot.
Take care of this, Kyle. Put it in your saddlebag.
Why him, Brock?
Because he's the only honest man here. Everybody knows Carl's not in it for the loot, but for the pure hell of it. He's the only one you can trust not to steal from you because he don't give a damn about money. Stow it away now, Carl. We've already wasted too much time on this chicken feed.
Every little bit helps, Brock.
Carl turned, starting down the trail toward where the horses were picketed. Fenner trotted after him.
Where are you going, Fenner?
I want my hat back! It's my hat, and I want it!
Watch him, Carl. I make sure none of that loot sticks to his fingers.
Hap Engelhart watched it all with disdain.
That's Penny Annie's stuff. How about a look-see at what's in the wagon?
Balding, with a beaky nose and vulture face, Hap was lean, spare, and as tough as a strip of beef jerky. A lifetime in the saddle had left him so bow-legged that a hogshead barrel could have passed lengthwise between them without touching the insides of his thighs. He was in his late 50s, old for an outlaw. That meant he was good at what he did, because he'd been at the business of robbing and killing since boyhood days. And few men in his peculiar trade lived long enough to grow ripe and full in years. Hap was short for Happy, a moniker hung on him long ago by some sagebrush wag in the same humor as calling a big man tiny. He looked around at some of the others.
We'd like to see what we've been working so hard for.
You speaking for this bunch now, Hap? What do you think is in the crates? Eggs?
I sure as hell hope not, Brock. If we come all this way for nothing, I...
Harper faced him, hands on hips.
Yeah? What do you do then, Hap?
I'll be purely disappointed, Brock.
What I thought. You were born sour, Hap. Whatever's in that wagon, honey or horse turds, you'll stay sour.
He eyed the rest of the gang. They were taut, keyed up.
I suppose none of you will rest easy till you've had a look, so let's get it over with.
He went to the wagon, the others swarming around it, crowding in. Their faces were eager, racked, like players at a gambling table intent on a turn of the wheel. Down came the freight wagon's tailgate. They cut the ropes, tying down the canvas tarpaulin over the cargo and folded it back, bearing stacked wooden crates.
You like to brag on your strength, Neil. Get up here and haul one of those crates down.
Right, Brock.
Neil was strong-backed, big, beefy, athletic. He clambered up on the tailgate. Squaring his stance, he took hold of one of the topmost crates and wrestled it loose from the stack.
Easy does it. Lower it down, don't drop it.
Words in big black letters were stenciled on the top and sides of the crate.
What's that say?
What's the matter, Dewey? Can't you read?
No, can you?
Well, no.
It says property of U.S. Army.
Not no more, it ain't.
Neil manhandled the crate, red-faced, veins bulging. He started lowering it down from the tailgate and lost his grip. The heavy crate fell to the ground, breaking open a corner of the nailed-down lid.
Damn it, Neil, I told you to be careful.
I'm sorry, Brock. It got away from me.
Use your knife to pry it open the rest of the way, Dewey.
Dewey used a long-bladed sheath knife to lever open the lid, then threw it back, exposing the contents. The crate was filled with brand-new repeating rifles. The outlaws pressed in, all avid, eager acquisitiveness. The prettiest young whore in the territory might have been stripped naked and sprawling before them, and they wouldn't have noticed. This was a magical moment for the Batman. Brock Harper himself was not immune to the lure of the loot. The seductive siren call of that much prime lethal hardware laid out at his feet. The corners of his eyes and mouth turned up. He reached into the crate and hauled out a weapon, holding it up for all to see.
Take a look, boys. One brand spanking new Henry repeating rifle. 12 to a box, 12 boxes in all. With thousands of cartridges in some of the other crates. There's more mass firepower in that wagon than anywhere else on the frontier. Now, what kind of hell do you think we can raise with that?
All of the outlaw band were appropriately enthused and excited. Even Hap Engelhart's sour-faced expression looked a little bit less funereal than usual.
What do I always say? Trust Brock Harper. Well, seeing is believing. When Harper tells you something is so, it's so. You can take it to the bank. I should say, you can take the bank. Every bank in the Southwest, and every town those banks are in. Bust them wide open like ripe melons and rip out all the meat and juices until you've had your fill.
You're the bull of the woods, boss!
You said a mouthful, Brock!
Harper handed the rifle around so the others could examine it. It was passed from hand to hand, stroked with all the tenderness that none of these hard cases would ever expend on a lover. They fondled it possessively, caressing its smooth lines and well-wrought workings. A bottle of red whiskey appeared.
Here you go, Brock.
Harper grabbed the bottle. It was one-third full.
Didn't leave me much, did you, you greedy bastards?
Fenner stepped up, his hat back on his head.
It's a wonderation that there's any left at all.
Harper pulled the cork out with his teeth and spat it out. He upended the bottle, taking a long pull, gulping greedily, draining the bottle. Gripping it by the neck, he flung the empty out high over the creek. He drew his gun. The bottle exploded in midair, raining shards of broken glass into the water.
Now that I have your attention, let's get back to work. There's plenty that needs doing. You've all had a chance to paw that gun, now give it here. Come on, give it up. There's plenty of time for that later. Every mother's son will at least get his own personal rifle at the share up at the hideout, along with plenty of cartridges. I know you'll put them to good use.
The rifle came back hand over hand to Harper, who put it back in the crate from which it came. He closed the broken lid as best he could, hammering it into place with a thud from his club-like fist.
Load it back in the hopper.
A couple of men hefted the crate into the wagon. The tailgate was closed, locked in place. The flap of the tarp was pulled down, covering the crates.
We're taking a gun wagon to Ghost Canyon. Too bad we got to travel by day, but there's nothing for it but to do it. Those of you picked for the cleanup, you know who you are. We'll have to load the bodies on the flatbed wagon, cover them up, take them north into the hills and get rid of them. Then join us at the hideout. Hey, Kimbrough, Fenner, we've got to get rid of these blue-bellied duds. Get them all gathered up for burning later. That's important. Make a clean sweep of it. Any scrap or a rag of blue coat is a ticket for a one-way ride to the gallows. Remember that, all of you. No mistakes, no slip-ups. Each must do his part, else all of us will have our heads in the noose. Move!
7 men stayed behind at Macy's Fort, mopping up the massacre site. Brock Harper and the rest of the bunch were gone, riding out with the gun wagon and the horses of the dead men. They went west on the trail and were soon lost from view. The blood in the creek took care of itself. The current carried it away downstream, leaving no trace of the spilled gore. That was a good thing about using a creek for the killing ground. It was self-cleaning. The flatbed wagon, which had been hidden around a bend in the woods trail, now stood on the muddy creek bank near the bodies. The four-horse team, harnessed to it, unnerved by the presence of blood and violent death, pawed the ground. The handbrake on the wagon was set tight. A wooden keg was stowed up front in the boot of the wagon. Hand-painted red lettering identified its contents. Gunpowder. Dewey hefted a body into the wagon.
Yeah, move that black powder out of the way!
Yeah.
Neil hoisted the keg.
Where do you want it?
Put it on top of that rock for now. Out of the way where no damn fool can touch off the gunpowder with a stray match or a careless cigar butt.
Neil toted the keg to a grassy shoulder on the north side of the trail and set it on top of a flat-topped, waist-high boulder.
Yeah, that'll do.
Neil pushed his hat forward and scratched the back of his head.
What's gunpowder for?
You feel like digging a grave deep enough for all these bodies?
Hell no.
Well, that's what the gunpowder's for. We take the bodies north into the hills, dump them in some ravine, and blow it up, bringing the sides down on it.
Huh. Yeah, I get it. Pretty good.
Yeah, well, the boss will be glad to know it meets with your approval. You men, start loading them bodies on the wagon. And be quick about it. We don't want to spend all day here. Not when the others will be long back at the hideout, eating up all the grub and drinking up all the whiskey.
It was early afternoon, hot. There were a lot of bodies, 12 in all. They were dead weight and smelled bad. Fat black flies swarmed them. Dewey stood at one end of the pile of bodies, the one nearest the wagon.
Somebody lend a hand here. I ain't gonna do it all by my lonesome.
Most of the outlaws wore bandanas tied over their noses and mouths to mask the stink. They worked up a pretty good sweat loading the corpse cargo on the flatbed wagon. The more bodies loaded on the wagon, the harder the job got, because the flatbed filled up pretty quick, and each successive body had to be thrown on top of an ever higher pile. Dewey eyed the results with a critical eye.
You're getting sloppy, man. Them deaders are all over the place. Soon as a wagon crosses a rough patch of ground, some will start to fall off. Now, come on, dress them up there.
Gordy, a gangly, raggedy man out of Natchez, took issue.
What'd you get a flatbed for? It's no good for the job. You need some with a hopper to hold the load in place.
Yeah, well, that's the only wagon we could find to steal on the way over here.
There's no work for honest outlaws, Jeff.
Quit bellyaching.
The work got done. Dewey circled the flatbed, studying it from different angles.
All right, now tie them down with some rope so they don't fall off. Let's cover them up, too. Can't go traipsing around the country in broad daylight with a wagon load of corpses.
Why not? Anybody sees us, it'll be their tough luck. We'll burn them down. What's another body, more or less?
Dewey thought there was some merit in that view, but since Gordy had said it, he was moved to take a contrary position.
It's no sense asking for trouble. We'll cover them up with a horse blanket or two.
This, too, was done. Blankets secured by ropes masked the flatbed's unsightly load, mostly. A few hands and legs stuck out past the edges of the covering. Gordy went to the creek, hunkering down beside it. He took off his bandana, dipped it in the water, and mopped his face with it. He rose, a flicker of motion on the other side of the ford catching his eye.
Getting a load of this.
A rider was approaching the edge of the eastern bank, a lone rider on a gray horse.
Somebody's coming.
How many?
One man.
One of ours?
No, a stranger.
Too bad for him. You boys know what to do.
I'll get my rifle and drop him from here.
No. Wait till he crosses over and comes to us. That'll be one more for the pile. Come back here, Gordy, before he sees you and gets suspicious.
Gordy joined the others in the shadows of the overgrown trail. He flexed his fingers, working some of the stiffness out, loosening them up. The stranger on the gray crossed the ford, coming at a walk.
He don't suspicion nothing.
The gray stepped out of the creek, climbing up on the west bank, advancing several paces into the shade under the trees. The outlaws stood in a loose line across the trail, blocking it. The stranger reined in. He blinked a couple of times. Otherwise, his face was utterly impassive, betraying no sign of surprise or alarm. He was a blonde, blue-eyed giant. The bad men's faces were cruel, mocking. Remy Ballou took it on himself to do the talking. He liked to run his mouth.
Hello, friend.
Howdy, gents. Miss the road to Hangtree Town?
A Yankee.
The stranger's eyes were restless, in constant motion, scanning the scene. They took in the number and weaponry of those who faced him, the arms and legs protruding out from under the blankets covering the mound on the flatbed wagon, and, on top of a boulder, the wooden keg with the legend Gunpowder emblazoned across it in red letters.
The road to Hangtown? That depends, friend.
Depends on what?
On who you are.
And who might you be?
Us? Why, you might call us the Toll Keepers.
Remy played to his compadres.
Well, didn't know this was a toll road. What's the fare?
Your life.
Tell you what. Cut the cat and mouse crud and get on with it.
The stranger must have reached a similar conclusion. He struck first. His hand streaked to the pistol, stuck butt out in the top of his pants on his left side, drawing. He put two slugs into the keg of gunpowder. Earlier, Sam Heller had come southward out of the hills across the plains to Swift Creek. His path struck the more northerly Mesa's Ford rather than Flatbridge. That suited him fine. He preferred to make a quiet entrance into the country by a roundabout route rather than approach Hangtown directly. He'd neared the ford well after the carnage was over. Shadows hid the depths of the trail, tunneling through the trees on the west bank. One thing he could see from a long way off, though, buzzards circling high above the site. A half dozen or so of them hung way up in the sky. Black V-shapes wheeling and soaring on the thermals, hovering, waiting. Sam knew what that meant well enough. Death. Buzzards have keen eyesight. They can sight dead meat from a long way off. They're scavengers, carrion eaters, shunning live prey in favor of the remains of another's fresh kill. Their gathering over the west bank meant that there was something dead below. That they still remained aloft rather than descending to feast on the remains meant that the predator that had made the kill was still in place. Sam decided to investigate, crossing the creek to the other side. The gray advanced steadily. It was a warhorse, used to blood, violence, and death through long exposure. The clearing in the trees was full of all three. Sam saw that it was thick with armed men lurking back in the shadows. He made out seven of them, gunmen, outlaws, cocky bastards sure of themselves, a type he knew and didn't like. He could feel the rage within him, ever present just below the surface, begin to freeze into a ball of burning ice. There were more of them than he expected, but he didn't find their numbers particularly daunting. He trusted to skill and nerve to see him through. And if not, what the hell? The keg of gunpowder on top of a boulder decided him on his play. The stopper in its top hole indicated that it was full. Sam took a mental picture of the layout, memorizing the positions of his foes relative to himself, the clearing, and each other. He didn't wait for Remy to run out his taunting line. He stole a march on him and the others, taking the initiative. He drew and put two balls of hot lead into the keg. He was ready for it, having already worked his booted feet clear of the stirrups. He threw himself off the saddle to the right. Choking masses of gray-white smoke boiled through the clearing, veiling the scene. Sam hit the ground with a jarring thud. He lay flat as debris rained down around him, tree branches and boughs pelting the ground. The gun was still gripped in his hand. The blast left him temporarily hard of hearing. Slugs speared through the smoke, zipping past.
Stop firing, you blame fools! You're only shooting each other!
The smoke screen thinned, rifts appearing in the murk, showing glimpses of shadowy, indistinct figures stumbling around. Sam rose to one knee. He stuffed the gun in his belt and unlimbered the mule's leg, holding it leveled with both hands. A gap opened in the gray-white billows. A figure stumbled forward, gun in hand, staggering blindly. Sam saw him first. He rose into a crouch, moving a few paces forward and to the side.
Oh, I'm gunshot! Somebody help me!
The breeze moved masses of smoke east out of the clearing across the creek. The pall thinned, bringing more of the surroundings into view. One of the gang prowled around in a half crouch, gun swinging from side to side in search of a target. Sam heard somebody cut the prowler down.
Oh! I got him!
Hold your fire, you dumb sons of bitches!
The smoke screen lifted, thinning, coming apart. Details came into view. The blast had spooked the flatbed wagon team, sending them and the wagon load of corpses plunging west down the trail. One of the metal hoops that ringed the gunpowder keg, holding it together, had been turned by the blast into a white-hot streaking scythe. It hit one outlaw on the head, taking off the top of his skull above the eyebrows. Smoke drifted out, unveiling two outlined figures. They were on their feet, coughing, eyes tearing. Streamers and swirls of smoke drifted past them. Remy and Gordy became aware of each other at the same time. They pivoted, leveling their guns on each other. Jeff Parr, who lay prone on the ground, gun in hand, saw what was about to happen.
Don't shoot!
Remy and Gordy held their fire. Jeff rose to his feet as Remy turned in quick arcs.
Where's the stranger?
Damned if I know. Maybe we got him.
Sam Heller stepped into view a dozen paces away from the trio. They all saw each other at the same time. Parr and Gordy dropped where they stood. Remy, quicker, got off two shots. One laid a hot line along Sam's left side. The other fetched him a stunning blow to the left shoulder, knocking him off balance. Sam's round drilled Remy a few inches above the belt buckle. Sam stood, swaying, reeling. He spread his legs, planting his feet farther apart in an effort to stay on them. He looked around. The ground was strewn with debris and dead men. No one left to kill. A hole in Sam's shoulder oozed warm redness, soaking his shirt with a fast-spreading stain. He felt lightheaded. His vision swam in and out of focus. He missed his footing. The earth rushed up to meet him. Blackness. Johnny Cross and Luke Pettigrew came to Mesa's Ford. Native sons both, they knew the country, knew that with Flatbridge out, the ford was the nearest way to cross Swift Creek. The two men on the chestnut horse paused at the east bank of the ford. A thin film of smoke lay like a filter across the opposite bank, veiling the other side. Johnny sniffed the air.
You smell that, Luke? Gunpowder.
They crossed to the west bank, encountering a scene of death and destruction. Bodies littered the muddy ground. Combat veterans of some of the war's bloodiest battles, the two Texans were unfazed by the carnage.
Some shooting match.
More than a gunfight. Looks like a bomb went off. You can smell the cordite in the air.
Whew, they had themselves a party, all right. But who are they?
Beats me. You've been back longer than I have. You recognize them?
I don't know him from Adam.
Hold the reins. I want to take a look around.
Johnny stepped down from the saddle and eyed the scene. One of the fallen lay apart from the others, off by himself over to one side of the clearing. He lay on his side with his back to Johnny, his legs together and bent at the knees. A handsome steel-dust horse stood beside him, its head down, nuzzling him. Nearby lay an unusual weapon, a sawed-off repeating rifle. Johnny went to him, towing the body. The man lay curled on his right side, a wide, dark patch of blood staining his left shoulder and chest. His face was white.
That gray's a good-looking animal.
This hombre don't need it no more.
Yeah.
Johnny put a boot on the stranger's upturned left hip and rolled him over on his back. He went down on one knee beside him, reaching for the stranger's pockets to turn them out for valuables.
Uh-oh.
I heard that.
Luke pulled the gun from his waistband, thumbing back the hammer.
Easy, Luke. Don't do nothing rash now.
Yeah, I got him covered, Johnny.
He's got me covered.
Sam Heller's eyes were open. He held a pistol in his right hand. It had been hidden from view beneath him until Johnny rolled him over. A Navy Colt 36. Johnny felt the gun pressed into his midsection. Sam's face showed signs of strain. He propped himself up on his elbows. He'd passed out earlier from shock and loss of blood. The sound of the approaching horse splashing in the creek and the voices of two men woke him. He didn't know how long he'd been out. Not too long, though. The sun rode in near the same place in the sky. The mule's leg lay out of reach, and he wasn't sure he could wield it properly from down on the ground. His left arm wasn't working so good. While the newcomers were crossing the creek, Sam eased the Navy Colt from where he put it in his waistband and half rolled over on it, hiding it under him. He played dead until Johnny Cross knelt down beside him to pick his pockets. Movement started the wound in his shoulder bleeding again.
Whoa. All right now. My mistake.
Don't make another. It could be fatal. Keep your hands where I can see them. Tell your friend not to get trigger happy.
You hear that, Luke?
Yep. I hear me a damn Yankee, too.
No need to go into that now, Luke.
You pull that trigger and you're a dead man, Yank.
That ain't gonna do me much good, Luke. I ain't looking for trouble, mister.
You shouldn't have been looking in my pockets.
What good's money to a dead man? I thought you was dead.
Well, I'm not.
Me and Luke were just riding through.
You should have kept going.
I'm on my way, if that's all right with you.
Vamoose.
You mind taking that hog leg out of my belly first?
Sam eased his gun hand back, pulling the muzzle away from where it had been pressing Johnny's midsection. Johnny rose slowly to his feet. Sam kept him covered with the gun.
You look pretty bad hit, mister.
Don't worry about it.
It ain't you I'm worried about. It's me. You're kind of shaky. Wouldn't want that gun of yours to go off by mistake.
If it does, it won't be a mistake.
I'm gonna start walking toward my horse now, so as I can ride on out of here.
Get.
Johnny turned his back to Sam and slowly started toward his horse, keeping his open hands in plain sight and away from his guns. Luke held the reins wrapped around his left hand as it gripped the top of the saddle horn to hold himself steady. His right hand held the gun pointed at Sam. Johnny stepped around a dead body in his way and went to the chestnut.
Let that hammer down easy, Luke. I don't want you shooting me. That'd be a hell of a note.
Luke uncocked the hammer and stuck the gun in the top of his pants. He moved back to make room, and Johnny climbed up in the saddle. Johnny glanced back over his shoulder. Sam sat upright, legs extended on the ground. He leaned forward, gun in hand, leveled on Johnny and Luke. Cold sweat misted his pale, haggard face, but his gun held steady without a tremor.
If you don't mind my asking, what happened here?
A little disagreement about the right of way.
We're riding out now.
Nobody's stopping you.
Maybe we'll meet again, stranger. If you pull through.
I will.
Then we'll meet again. Be sure of it.
He started his horse forward at a slow walk. Luke and Johnny rode west along the trail, rounding a bend that put the stranger and the West Bank clearing out of sight behind a screen of brush.
You want to take him? Let's not press our luck. That's one ornery cuss. Takes a lot of killing to put him down.
They came into view of a line of horses tied up to a hitching line strung between a couple of trees. These were the mounts belonging to the raiders who'd remained behind to clean up the massacre site. The explosion and gunfire had spooked them, but the rope held, preventing them from running away, as the team pulling the corpse wagon had done. The animals were anxious, spooky, sidling and pawing the ground.
You see what I see, Luke?
Oh, that is some mighty fine horse flesh.
My thoughts exactly. They ain't doing those dead men back at the creek no good neither. You stay on my horse, Luke. Keep an eye out for that yank.
I'll do better than that.
Luke shucked the carbine out of the saddle scabbard and turned the chestnut to face back along the trail the way they came, toward the creek bank, hidden behind the trees.
You sure you don't want to take that billy yank?
This is no time to go looking honest-to-God gift horses in the mouth.
A veteran horse thief, Johnny got right down to business. Taking a clasp knife from his pocket, he unfolded a blade and began cutting loose the hitching rope to which the line of horses was tied. He mounted up on a fast-looking roan with good lines, securing one end of the rope to the saddle horn. The line stretched behind him, trailing a string of seven horses.
We can switch horses later, Luke. Something damn funny happened here. Something big. Best we clear out of here pronto.
Let's ride, Johnny.
They rode, taking the string of stolen horses with them. Sam Heller struggled to his feet, holding on to the gray saddle for support. Somewhere along the way, he had holstered the mule's leg and stuck the pistol in his waistband. The gray turned its head toward him, regarding him with moist, dark, expressive eyes. Sam Heller stroked the gray's muzzle.
Good boy, Dusty. Didn't run out on me, did you? You're a good horse.
It nuzzled him with its snout, almost knocking him down. Sam was shaky on his pins. His shirt stuck to his shoulder and chest due to dried blood. Blood that was not so dry trickled in warm rivulets down his front. The wound in his left shoulder was bleeding again. The shoulder was stiff, numb. His left side, where a slug had creased it, felt like a hot iron had been laid across it. It took plenty for him to rise. Without Dusty standing there beside him to give him something to hold on to, he wouldn't have been able to stay upright. He might fall on his face yet. If he did, he might not get up. What strength he had left kept pouring out of him fast. Experimentally, he wriggled the fingers of his left hand. They seemed to work all right. He made a fist, opening and closing it. The bullet in his shoulder hadn't cut any nerves or tendons. Something nagged at him, a sense of incompleteness. Something was missing. What? His hand went to his head and he realized he was without his hat. It must have fallen off during the action. He looked around for it, spotting it a half dozen paces away. He guided the horse to it, walking beside the animal, holding on to the saddle. Clutching the stirrup, he hunkered down and picked up the hat. As he straightened, a wave of dizziness washed over him, a torrent of darkness glittering with little colored lights. He held on to the saddle while the darkness passed, fading away as the scene faded in. He pulled the hat down on his head. The Texas sun could be cruel to a bareheaded man. Besides, it was his hat and he wanted it. that had seen him through a lot of scrapes and across a lot of ground. He had things to do, important things, but his top priority was to get back up on the horse while he still had the strength to do so. He climbed up into the saddle, a long, hard climb. The effort left him trembling. After a time, the worst of it went away, but he was still weak. Taking the mule's leg in hand, he reloaded it with cartridges from the bandoliers crisscrossing his torso. Now he was ready for whatever might come at him, as ready as could be under the circumstances. He holstered the weapon. Sam Heller had been wounded a number of times in the past, both before and during the war. He knew that proper first aid meant the difference between life and death. No medic he, but he had a working knowledge of the necessities learned on the trail and battlefield. He undid the bandana, knotted around his neck, and wiped his face with it, mopping up cold sweat. As soon as he wiped it clean, more fresh sweat oozed out to replace it. Sam opened the top of his shirt, unbuttoning it, fingers feeling thick and clumsy. Gore plastered the garment to his flesh. He peeled back the fabric, freeing it. The entrance wound in his shoulder was an ugly puckered crater. No exit wound. The bullet was still in him. A raw red furrow lay plowed diagonally across his rib cage on the left side, where Remy's first shot creased him. It hurt like hell, but wasn't as serious as the shoulder wound. Folding the bandana into a flat square, Sam placed it against the wound. He pressed down on it. Pain waves spasmed through the numbness, stabbing deep into the inside of his head. Blood soaked into the compress, wetting it, helping hold it plastered in place. Sam leaned forward, fumbling open the top of his right side saddlebag pouch, groping inside it. He pulled out a length of rawhide cord. He knotted a sliding loop in one end of the rawhide strand and stuck his left arm into it, drawing the loop up to his shoulder. Placing it so that it set across the bulge of the wadded bandana compress, he pulled it tight, cinching it into place. He wound the free end of the cord several more times around the shoulder to further secure the compress from slipping. He knotted it in place, careful not to make it so tight as to cut off circulation. Lack of proper blood flow could also be damaging, leading to loss of the arm. He checked the rig. It seemed crude, but serviceable.
Yeah.
Sam sipped some water from his canteen, washing out the inside of his mouth before swallowing. Shadows flitted across his face and eyes. He looked up. The buzzards circling overhead were flying low.
Yeah.
Sam dug his heels into the horse's flanks and rode on. He continually scanned the walls of brush lining the trail, looking for lurkers, hand resting on the butt of the mule's leg. The trail plunged west through a half mile of woods before breaking out into a stretch of wide open country, rolling hills dotted with trees and brush. Sam paused at the tree line at wood's edge, surveying the scene. The vast, sprawling landscape seemed empty of any other humans. The hill country lay north, the plains south. Sam rode into the open, out of the shade, and into the hot sun. The openness increased his sense of vulnerability. He followed a course that minimized his exposure, leaving the trail to strike a zigzag path that took advantage of what cover there was. He angled toward a stand of timber, a low mound, rocky knob. He kept to the lowland, threading the washes and draws, avoiding crossing the ridges where possible. Sam knew from previous studies of the map that the main trail west was the old Mission Road. Hangtown lay to the southwest, more south than west, far from sight. Going to town was his best bet. He needed doctoring. Entering Hangtown in a weakened condition presented its own dangers, but it was still the best, worst option. He looked back at the woods between him and Swift Creek. The buzzards were slowly but surely descending on the West Bank clearing. He didn't have to see the scene to know what would happen. The airborne scavengers would soon be at their work, touching down to begin the feast. The big birds would batten on the dead, bringing sharp, tearing beaks into play to rip and tear. Usually they went for the eyeballs first, pecking out the delicacies and gulping them whole. Left undisturbed, they wouldn't quit until the carcasses were stripped clean of every shred of flesh, leaving only gleaming white bones.
Eat hearty, boys.
He meandered southwest across the plains. This was the open range, no fences here to mark property lines. Streams and rivulets spilled south out of the hills to lace the prairie with winding silver veins. It was well-watered country, prime grazing land. Clusters of animals dotted the landscape, longhorn cattle by the hundreds, running free and wild. Weird-looking creatures with long faces and narrow sides. Sam kept his distance from them. They were ornery critters with no fear of man. The bulls sported horns spanning 4 feet across and more, with wickedly pointed tips. In this land of vast vistas, distances seemed endless. No sign of town yet. The westering sun blazed bright, but curling around the edges of the big sky lay boiling, bubbling darkness. The darkness fomented in Sam, lightheaded from his loss of blood. His awareness drifted, fading in and out. The lurch of the horse jarred him. It shook him awake. He realized he'd been semi-conscious. That scared him. In the distance, several hundred yards away, a many-legged black blur of motion swarmed down a long, low ride toward him. Sam's eyes stung from sweat in them. He rubbed them to clear his vision. The many-legged blur resolved itself into a group of riders, about a dozen of them, maybe more. The newcomers were ahead and to one side of him. They slowed when they saw him. His course would take him past them, so that they'd be 50 yards to the right. They started downhill, swinging left to intercept him. Some of them shucked rifles out of scabbards. Sam rode on, seemingly unconcerned, oblivious. Pounding hoofbeats neared. The riders spread out in a wide arc to bar his way. Pulling rifles from scabbards, they formed an inverted crescent, shaped like the horns of a bull.
Don't make me fight through you, boys. I don't have much left.
It was all Sam could do just to stay in the saddle. Nearing, he was able to make them out. They were Mexican-style vaqueros, decked out in wide-brimmed sombreros, white shirts, bell-bottom pants, and brown leather chaps, armed with 6 guns and rifles. Sam reined in a stone's throw away. At the center of the crescent sat the trim figure of a woman. She was flanked by a shaggy-headed ogre and a gypsy with a gold earring. The woman filled the field of Sam's vision. She was a beauty, with dark, flashing eyes and vivid red mouth, full-bodied and long-legged. She wore a black bolero hat tilted rakishly to one side. Masses of inky blue-black hair sat pinned up at the back of her head. She sat astride in a long-sleeved white blouse, black vest, black wrist-length gloves, black jeans, and black leather riding boots. Vest and gun belt were trimmed with decorative silver conchos that sparkled and glinted in the sun. The scene pulsed with shadows and light, the pulsing synchronized to the labored beating of Sam's heart. Was it love? No. He'd run out of everything that had kept him going up to now. With his last flickering reserves of energy, he managed to lift an arm to courteously touch thumb and forefinger to his hat brim.
Howdy, ma'am.
Her face shone as impassive as that of a carved stone idol. Sam slid sideways off his horse. The ground rushed up to meet him, fetching him a terrific, jarring blow. He lay on his back on the ground, as if at the bottom of a deep well. At the top spun a blue disk of sky. The well shaft resolved itself into a circle of bodies surrounding him, hemming him in. Faces looked down at him, featureless orbs floating high above, impossibly distant. Blackness returned, swallowing up Sam Heller. Long shadows of late afternoon spread across the landscape when Johnny Cross came in sight of the Cross family spread. Johnny lay prone at the top of a ridge several hundred yards east of the ranch. It was in his nature to look before leaping. Growing up on a frontier plagued by outlaws and warlike Indians will do that if one wants to live to grow up at all. Subsequent years of war and outlawry only confirmed him in the habit of caution. He rarely came at a thing directly, preferring to approach it sideways, a trait promoting longevity. Luke stayed down at the foot of the ridge, minding the string of stolen horses. Johnny had dismounted and climbed to the top of the rise for a look-see. He was careful not to show himself above the crest. A skyline figure could be seen from a long way off. He now set eyes on the family homestead for the first time in over 5 years, since the day he rode off to war.
Well, she's still there.
The Edwards Plateau came down from the northeast, slanting southwest across the plains to intersect the Broken Hills. The Broken Hills, commonly known as the Breaks, was a belt of rough country, a rocky rampart stretching north-south for many a mile. The Breaks was a maze of hills, ravines, gullies, and valleys. The Cross spread was the westernmost ranch in Hangtree County. It stood midway between the Old Mission Road in the north and Hangtown Trail in the south. It sat on a flat covered with green grass at the foot of the Breaks, near the eastern mouth of Wild Horse Gulch. A stream ran through the property, splashing and sparkling. The lowering sun grazed the western hills, casting long shadows across the plains. Blue-gray gloom pooled at the foothills, creeping east across the land. A rocky spur thrust out into the range. At its tip rose a mounded hill with a jagged top. The ranch house nestled at the base of the hill, a flat-roofed, square-walled blockhouse. A line of smoke rose not from within, but from somewhere near it. Human figures moved around in the yard in front of the house. They were too far away for Johnny to make out any details. Whoever they weren't Crosses. Johnny was the last of the family. He shuffled downhill and got on his horse.
What's up?
Somebody's home. Any idea who?
Nope. Bob, I ain't been out this way since I came back home last fall. Yeah, I'll tell you this, though. Chances are it's a bunch of no-goods. The Breaks was always wild, but it's outlaw country now. They make their hideouts there and raid out on the plains.
Squatters are outlaws. They're on Cross land.
What are you fixing to do, Johnny?
Serve notice on them. It's moving day.
Well, how many are they?
I don't know. I couldn't make out much detail.
Well, what's the plan?
We'll circle north into the Breaks, swing round, and come out of the gulch.
Johnny and Luke had come down from the north, turning left off Old Mission Road and riding south below the ridge for cover. Now they partially retraced their route, pointing north along the ridge trail. They rode at a slow pace, almost a walk, to avoid having their string of horses kick up a dust cloud that would alert those at the ranch to their presence. The ridge broke up into a line of low hills. The duo turned left, riding west through a gap, to emerge on the plains at a point where the hill with the jagged top stood between them and the ranch house, screening them. They crossed a long open stretch to the foot of the Breaks. They saw no one from the ranch and were apparently undetected. What looked like a solid rock wall from a distance became a jumble of hills, ridges, ravines, arroyos, boulders, knobs, and stone needles. This was home turf to Johnny Cross, who'd spent countless boyhood hours ranging the Breaks and making it his. He'd roamed its myriad hills and ways, searching for stray cattle, seeking wild mustangs, hunting the game trails. The terrain looked just as he'd remembered it. People come and go, the works of man fall into ruin, but the land abides. Johnny and Luke entered a ravine, one of many feeder routes through the hills into Wild Horse Gulch. The cut was thick with shadow, the sun hidden behind the hills. The path wound west, then south, opening into the gulch. The gulch was an oval valley, comprising many square miles of well-watered grassland ringed by rock walls. Many smaller ravines and gullies fed into it. It was home to several hundred wild horses. Johnny and Luke swung east, making for a gap opening onto the plains. The setting sun hung at their backs. Nearing the gap, they reined in to make some final preparations.
What about the horses? We'll pick at the string here and come back for them later.
He pointed to a cleft in the rocks about 10 feet wide and 15 feet deep.
We'll hitch and hobble them there to keep them from straying.
All right.
Johnny dipped into a saddlebag and brought out two revolvers.
Take these, Luke. You want to make sure you're dressed for the party.
I'd just as soon use the carbine if you can spare it. I'm a better hand with a long gun than a pistol.
Suit yourself.
Yeah. Johnny shook the carbine out of the scabbard and handed it to Luke.
Much obliged.
Take another six gun. Might come in handy.
All right.
Luke took the pistol. He already had a gun stuck in the top of his pants, so he stuffed the second in the side pocket of his Confederate gray tunic. Johnny reached into another saddlebag and pulled out a pair of gun belts, each carrying a holstered gun. He fitted them on over his shoulders so the guns hung butt out under his arms. Luke's eyes bulged.
Damn, Johnny, how many guns you got?
Never enough, but these should do it for now. Back with Quantrill, we never went on a raid with less than six guns each. I think we're ready. Let's get to work.